learning, you know, that we are to benefit from these. I think about 1 Corinthians 10 and how it says the things that happened with Israel, they were examples that, you know, we ought to learn from them, that we not fall. And when you study this period of time we're looking at, where we have the end of the United Kingdom under Solomon, and then we've just launched into the divided kingdom. You know, one of the things that's just a great illustration that you reap what you sow. That you fail to listen to God, you know, the consequences are going to follow. That here was Solomon, blessed with all of these riches, with this wisdom, this fame, all these great things, and yet his heart turned away from God because God had said, do not take these wives from the nations around you. He did. And so the kingdom divided. And we begun to look at the divided kingdom with, of course, Jeroboam ruling over Israel and Rehoboam ruling over Judah in the south. But then you have Jeroboam. Almost immediately after he becomes the king, he demonstrates a lack of faith in God. God says to him, look, you obey me. You keep my commandments. And I'm going to build for you an enduring house. And then he decides, well, no, I'm not sure that's going to work out. And so I'm going to build these golden calves. Put one down here at Bethel. I'm going to put one up here at Dan. I'm afraid that if the people do what God has said to do, go to the place I have chosen, they're going to turn away from me. And so he puts these places of false worship up. And what we're going to see today's lesson is God says, you failed to trust me. You're going to pay the price for it. And at the beginning of chapter 13, we've got this great section. I mean, you talk about drama. Just on a purely human level, if you just kind of try to appreciate this scene, that here is the king, and he is, of course, he's built his new place of worship here at Bethel. And let's remind ourselves, the name Bethel meant what? House of God. This is a place where God had appeared to Jacob in the dream. And now it's being perverted into a place of idolatry. But here is the king, and he is at the altar, and he is offering up incense. And then here comes a man coming up from Judah, and he denounces this altar. And I just find that to me one of the intriguing parts is that he doesn't say, Jeroboam. He looks at the altar and says, oh, altar, altar. And he prophesies against it. And he says, you're supposed to be an altar to the Lord for, you know, burnt offerings and sacrifices. But he says, men's bones are going to be burned on you. And this altar is going to split apart. And of course, Jeroboam, remember, he lashed out. He said, arrest that man. And his arm shrivels up and he can't pull it back in. Then, of course, the anger quickly turns to a plea for mercy. And the prophet prayed to God to restore him. He was healed. He said, oh, come on home with me now. Now he's very nice. But why does the prophet refuse to go to Jeroboam's house? God said, don't do it. God said, don't eat or drink in Israel. He said, don't even go home the same way. And so he takes off. And that should have been the end of this story. Well, actually, the next part of the story should have been to tell us what Jeroboam thought about all of this and how did it change him? Did it affect him? But instead, there's an old prophet from right there in Bethel that gets involved. Now, this is one of those times where there's a lot you don't know that you, on a human level, you'd really like to know. This old prophet, has he been a faithful prophet of God? Or, in the Old Testament, and y'all can check me on this, but I don't think you will ever find the words false prophet together. You know, false and prophet as together. There are many prophets who are false prophets. prophets of Baal, lying prophets. But the Old Testament will just say prophet and then let us know they were not good men. Is this one who's been a true prophet of the Lord? Is he been a prophet of, you know, Baal? I suspect he's been a prophet of the Lord, but he had some character flaws in him. Well, he wasn't there when all of this was happening. You know, there's a part of me wants to think that maybe that was a good sign on his part. That he wouldn't go down there and participate in it. I don't know. But his sons come home and they tell him about it. He said, which way did he go? And they told him. And he said, saddle the donkey for me. So verse 13, he gets on his donkey and he goes after this man. And look at verse 14. He found him sitting under an oak. Then he said to him, are you the man of God who came from Judah? And he said, I am. And I suggested to you Wednesday night, I'm just not sure, but what, there's not a little sign of a problem here. Look again at your map, and I will remind you, you know, most of you have maps in your Bible, but also the beginning of your, you know, the questions I put together on page 3, I've got a map, in the online version of it, it's in color. But Bethel sat almost right on the border. It's not like he was going to have to walk 3 days to get out of Israel and back into Judah. If he takes off and he just walks for a couple of hours, he is back in Judah. But no, he sat down to rest. God, to me, God had made it clear. You give no endorsement to this place. You get out of there. Don't eat or drink. He stops. Well, here comes the old prophet. And he says, come on with me and eat bread, verse 15. Now, again, this man of God says exactly what God told him. I can't do that. I'm not allowed to eat bread or drink water in this place, meaning Bethel. He's not far out of the city at all. He said, the Lord told me not to do that. And then verse 18, he said to him, this is the old prophet, I too am a prophet as you are. And an angel spoke to me by the word of the Lord, saying, bring him back with you to your house that he may eat bread and drink water. You got a prophecy? I've got a prophecy too. But what's the problem? He says at the end of the verse, he's lying, you know. I've always said that in the South, it's easy to remember this story because, you know, we're not going to call him the lying prophet. We'll drop the G. And so we've got a lying prophet who ends up, and then we have the man that believed the lying prophet gets eaten by a lion or killed by a lion. You know, you got lying and lying. But if you speak good English, it doesn't work as well, you know, and you pronounce the G. But y'all will always remember that now. That was the dumbest thing he ever said, but you'll remember it. You know, he lies to him. Now, is there a part of you that feels sorry for this? I always want to call him the younger prophet. He's never said to be younger, but the fact that he keeps talking about this one being older would seem to make you think he's a younger one. But he's going to die because he believes a lie. Why did he believe a lie? He had a clear message from God. What kind of proof does he ask when this prophet said, oh, hey, I got a message too. Man says, come up, eat with me because the angel spoke to me. Okay. You've got a clear revelation of God. And then somebody's contradicting that. And you don't demand any kind of proof, any demonstration. Remember 2 Thessalonians 2 talks about those that do not love the truth. They'll be given the strong delusion. They'll believe a lie and perish. And folks, there's a lesson for us in that. You know, I don't want to get off too long because I got to finish 14 today. But when somebody contradicts you know, what at least you believe to be God's message, put it to the test. Don't just believe somebody and say, well, I'm a Christian too. I'm a preacher. I'm, you know, no. You put it to the test. Find out, is it really the truth? And so he goes along with him, and they're eating bread and they're drinking their water. And as they sat at the table, this lying prophet suddenly becomes a true prophet. God does speak to him this time. God hadn't spoken to him about bringing that man back, but God chooses to use him to deliver a message. The message is very plain. You disobeyed me, verse 21. You didn't keep my commandment. He said, you ate bread and drank this water. And I said, don't eat bread, don't drink water. And your corpse is not going to come to the tomb of your fathers, which is a way of saying, you know, you won't die peacefully at home. Now, just try to picture this again. And you wonder, why did this old prophet lie to the man? Oh, I could offer some possibilities, but the real reality is I don't have any idea. But then when God did speak to him, he delivered the message. And verse 23 has one of those things that I guess I had missed it before. And it's not a great and important point, but it just struck me this time. Look at this. So it was, after he had eaten bread and after he had drunk, that he saddled the donkey for him, the prophet whom he had brought back. Now here's this man, his lie has brought the man back to his house. His lie is going to cause the man to die. But he's a very gracious host, and he goes out and saddles the donkey up for him, you know, to make it, you know, so he can head home. You know, he's going to be at least nice about that. This old prophet is something else. I mean, just a lot of the things in this. Well, they head out, and who does he meet along the way? The lion. And what does the lion do to him? It kills him. But take note of how he made it very clear this was not just a chance encounter with a lion. You know, there were lions in that part of the world. There were other, you know, carnivorous animals that saw people as potential food. He kills the man who's riding a donkey, and then the lion just stands there. And what does the donkey do? Stands. Now, what would a donkey normally do if there's a lion in the neighborhood? He's gone, you know. Well, people from Bethel are passing by, and they see over there. I mean, you see a lion. The book of Amos, he has this great statement, the lion is roared, who will not fear? You know, the lion is the king of the jungle. I mean, he's top of the food chain. They see a lion, and you can just imagine them back. And then there's a donkey standing there. And there's a body. That's that man that was out there prophesying about the altar. And word gets back to Bethel, and the man hears about it, the old prophet. He said, oh, I know who that is. I know what body that is. And the Lord has done exactly what, verse 26, the Lord has delivered him to the lion, which has torn him and killed him according to the word of the Lord, which he spoke to him. You know, never mentions his part in all of that. He said, saddle the donkey for me. So they got it. And he went out and he found it just like that. You've got the lion hasn't eaten the corpse. He hadn't eaten the donkey. You know, anyway. He brings this body back. And what does he do with the body of this man of God? Buries him in his own tomb. And look at that. He made great lamentation over him. Verse 30, he says, "Alas, my brother. Oh, my fellow prophet, what a tragedy. He's dead because of you." But, you know, oh, this is just such a terrible thing. And then he tells his sons, he says, "Now, when I die, this is where I want to be buried. You know, I want to be buried right beside this great prophet because everything he said is going to come to pass." You know, he prophesied against this altar and the shrines and these things. It's all going to happen. I guess all I can say is there's just no explaining some folks. You know, I mean, this man is, for whatever reason, he just had to have that prophet come back to his house with him. So he lied to him. Then he delivers this message that gets him, you know, that announces his death. Then he mourns him like they were the best of friends. Strange character. But I want you to take note of 33. This is, I think, really key. After this event, Jeroboam did not turn from his evil way. I always say, let's be careful about trying to read too much into a passage. But that statement seems to be intended to imply that the death of the prophet. Now remember, Jeroboam is there at the altar. He sees this man prophesy against it. And the altar does split open. Everything looks like this is a true prophet. And then that prophet gets killed. And what everybody can recognize is some kind of a judgment. It seems to me the implication, after this, Jeroboam did not turn, that it gave Jeroboam an out to say, "Well, maybe I was a little bit hasty in deciding this man was really telling the truth." Our lives can undo. I mean, we can teach truth and undo it by our lives, and this man did. But what does Jeroboam do? He makes priests from every class of people for the high places. Whoever wished, he consecrated him. And he became one of the priests of the high places. And this thing was the sin of the house of Jeroboam, so as to exterminate and destroy it from the face of the earth. 2 years after Jeroboam dies, every male in his family will be put to death. Why? God gave Jeroboam a great opportunity. Jeroboam didn't trust God. Jeroboam changed the worship. The people went right along with it because he made it convenient, made it appealing. You know, and you might think about that. Well, you know, anybody that wanted to be, he made them a priest. Well, why would people want to be a priest? Why not? You know, people giving you 10%. You know, the tithe is coming in. Every time somebody brings a sacrifice, you know, the animal had to, like on a burnt offering, the animal had to be skinned. Where'd the hides go? They went to the priest. Every animal, a portion of it belonged to the priest. And, you know, there are people that, hey, that's a good living. You know, they would do this. He has perverted all of this. And his house will be destroyed. Anybody, before we go into 14, I know this chapter 13, great. A lot of lessons you can apply about loving truth. You know, truth doesn't contradict truth. But let's look at 14 then. It just keeps going. Abijah, the son of Jeroboam, became sick. Now, think about what Jeroboam does next. He's going to send his wife up to Shiloh. At this time, he's living in Tirzah. Originally, it seems like he started out in Shechem, but he's moved to Tirzah. Jeroboam's child is sick. And obviously, this is a grave illness, and he knows it. Do you notice what he does in this time? He doesn't send his wife to one of the prophets of Bethel. He doesn't send her, you know, to... He goes back to the prophet he knows to be the prophet of the Lord. The prophet Ahijah that had told him that he would become the king. But I also want you to think about, what does he tell his wife to do when she goes up there? Disguise herself. Now, you're thinking, this man can know the fate of my child, but I can also fool that man and not let him know who I am. You know, he's got a strange view of God and his prophets. Let me just say this. Somebody might say, well, as it comes out, Ahijah is blind. Why do you disguise yourself if you're going into a blind man? Well, it would be for those people who would say, Ahijah, the king's wife is here to see you. You know, it was not, the disguise is not to fool him as much as those who would be at the house who would announce this. And look at what she takes. Now, Jeroboam's thinks he's being very sly. He's going to pull one over on the Lord's prophet. You take 10 loaves, some cakes, and a jar of honey. You know, 10 loaves. I mean, that wouldn't be 10 loaves. That'd be about like 10 pancakes, you know. That size or thickness, they'd be baked probably a little bit harder than that. A few little cakes, a little jar of honey. The kind of gift that any commoner would have taken if you go to the prophet. This is not like the king. You remember the queen of Sheba. She's got all these camels, this great following as she comes to Solomon. Jeroboam says, now you're going to act like you're just a commoner. And you're going to take a gift, because that's what people do. But you're going to take a small one. Of course, the Lord gave Ahijah the word. He said, look, the wife of Jeroboam is coming, verse 5. He's going to ask about the son. He said, thus and thus, you're going to tell her all of this, because she's going to pretend to be somebody else. Verse 6. I mean, this is the kind of thing, I just find it wonderful on just the human drama level, kind of. You know, here she is. She's disguised herself. She's got her little gift. And the old blind prophet says, come on in, wife of Jeroboam. I know who you are. You know, come on in. You know, there's no reason to pretend to be somebody else. And then, don't miss this. For I have been sent to you with bad news. Ahijah's sitting at the house waiting on her, but he describes it as, I have been sent to you. Ahijah's in charge now. He said, this is the Lord's message. And you want to talk about pulling no punches. The Lord says, you know, he said, you go tell Jeroboam, verse 7. Thus says the Lord God of Israel, I exalted you, I made you the ruler, I tore the kingdom from the house of David, I gave it to you, but you have not been like David. He kept my commandments. You've not done that. You've done all this evil, verse 9. You've made for yourself other gods and molded images. You have cast me behind your back. Therefore, he said, behold, I will bring disaster on the house of Jeroboam. I will cut off every male in Israel, bond and free. I'll take away the remnant of Jeroboam. Then he says, if a child of Jeroboam dies in the city, the dogs will eat it. If the death occurs out in the country, the birds of the air will eat it. You know, there's a sense in which, once you're dead, what does it matter what happens to your body? But there has always been within us the real, you know, the desire to honor our loved ones with a decent burial. You know, even cremation is, you know, done on our terms. That our, you know, Abraham wanted to bury his wife out of his sight. As far as we know, the, you know, only piece of land he owned was that burial place. The defiling of the corpse, the eating by the dogs, eating by the birds. And then, and you just picture yourself, you're this mother. The prophet says, you go on home. But when you get home, your child will die. Of course, I mean, if she even believed the prophet, she knew she couldn't just, well, I'll just wander around for the next 20 years. No, she knew better than that. But she said, he told her, he said, now look, here's one small consolation. When this child dies, everybody will mourn him. He'll have a decent burial. All will be good for him. He said, let me tell you, that's not going to be what happens with the rest of your children and grandchildren. They are going to be slaughtered. It's not going to be that way. And even looks, now this is way down the road. He looks to there being the whole nation being carried into captivity. Verse 15. And so Jeroboam's wife goes home. And it says, when she came to the threshold of the house, the child died. Jeroboam had a lengthy reign of 22 years. And then he rested with his father, and Nadab reigned in his place. One note I wanted to make mention of, this, you'll see this several times. Verse 19 says, the rest of the acts of Jeroboam, they are written in the book of the Chronicles of the Kings of Israel. In my Bible, Chronicles is not capitalized there. And don't confuse it with 1st and 2nd Chronicles. There were records kept, chronicles of Israel and Judah, that'll be referenced a number of times. And the biblical writer is saying here, you know, there's, now, by now it's been lost. But at that time, there were secular records. They had, you know, their Library of Congress, as it were, you know, the National Archives, such. They had records. He said, if you want to read more about him, you know, just as a political king, we have these chronicles you could read. But that's not the book of Chronicles. Hope that's clear. We're finished with Jeroboam. And now we kind of back up in a way. And that's the difficulty. When you come to the divided kingdom, you got these two kingdoms sitting side by side. Well, Jeroboam lives longer than Rehoboam. But we've got to back up now. We're going to back up now and we're going to take and talk a little bit about the life of Rehoboam. And if you've noticed with the, I'm giving you the readings in 2 Chronicles, though we're not trying to study it completely as a harmony. 2 Chronicles pays little attention to the kings of Israel until Israel is taken into captivity. 1 and 2 Kings often gives more attention to the kings of Israel. They talk more about Judah than Chronicles. Basically, once you pass Jeroboam and Rehoboam, Chronicles basically ignores the kings of Israel as usurpers, as, you know, apostates. But if you want to know more about these kings, Chronicles will be your, 2 Chronicles will be your source for that. But Rehoboam, he reigned, he was 41 when he became the king, and he's going to reign 17 years. Now, 2 Chronicles indicates that when Rehoboam started out, now remember, who's his father? What was Solomon's, the end of Solomon's life like? idolatry and he turned away from the Lord. But 2 Chronicles indicates, at least for the first 3 years of his reign, Rehoboam sought to follow God and obey God. And you remember when the kingdom divided and Rehoboam got back to Jerusalem, he got up an army of 180,000 people and he was ready to go to war. The prophet Shemaiah said, no, don't do that. The Lord says don't. And Rehoboam didn't. He listened to God. And for about 3 years, he listens to the Lord. And it speaks of how those were good years. But things changed. And I don't know all that goes into it. I think 2 Chronicles suggests that sense of security is part of it. You know, that old, when we prosper, we tend to think we don't need God as much. But both 1 Kings and 2 Chronicles make mention of what I ask in number 23. Who's Rehoboam's mother? An Ammonite. Her name was Naamah, I guess. She's an Ammonite. You go back and you look at Solomon, and Ammonites are one of the nations he specifically mentions that he served their gods. He made things for the wives of Ammon. You think about this. Here is the new king. His lineage is actually only half Abrahamic. He's a descendant of David and of Israel, of Jacob, on one side, but on the other, his mother is an Ammonite. Maybe that's part of it. It seems strange. If that's not part of it, why is it told to us twice? She was an Ammonitess. You know, Kings and Chronicles, they don't share all the same details. They both tell us this detail about him. Well, what it says then is Judah just turned away from God. You know, we've talked about how that in Israel, we've got the two places, Dan and Bethel, the official places. But look at Judah now. They are building high places, verse 23. Sacred pillars, wooden images, on every high hill and under every green tree. Just wherever there was a place that looked like, hey, that looks like a good spiritual place, let's build a place of idolatry. And there were perverted persons in the land. The worship of Baal and Asherah, who were, among other things, gods of fertility and harvest, involved immorality and perversion. And so you've got that going on. And so in the fifth year, who comes a calling? Shishak, the king of Egypt. Now, you remember Solomon, the first wife it made mention of was Solomon. He married the daughter of the king of Egypt. Good strategy. Maybe it would have worked, except that toward the end of Solomon's life, there was a change of dynasties down in Egypt. And the Shishak had overthrown the previous king. And it's a whole new dynasty. And he comes up and he takes away the treasures. Remember all those gold shields? These gold shields are gone now. And he takes these things away. And I'll just real quickly make mention. If you go to 2 Chronicles, it talks about how that Rehoboam, built and fortified certain cities. Well, it tells about it immediately after the division of the kingdom. And if you don't take time to look at a map, You're going to think, well, you know, he was worried about an invasion. No, the cities he fortifies are down here. He knew that Egypt was going to be a threat to him. And sure enough, here they come calling. And they take these things away. Remember, Shishak had been also the protector of Jeroboam. The Bible doesn't make mention of it, but the records of Egypt indicate that his attitude was kind of like, oh well, we used to be buddies. He attacked Israel too and conquered several of their cities and took away provisions. You reap what you sow. Solomon led to the division. Jeroboam, his house is going to be destroyed. Judah is suffering because of sin. I'm about to run out of time, but I want you to see something in Ecclesiastes 2. Now, this in light of how they came and they took away the treasures of Jerusalem, treasures of the temple, the treasures of the house of the king. By the way, 2 Chronicles does say that when this attack began, that Rehoboam humbled himself, at least for the moment, and God spared them from complete destruction. But Ecclesiastes 2, verse 18, then I hated all my labor in which I had toiled under the sun, because I must leave it to the man who will come after me, and who knows whether he will be wise or a fool. Yet he will rule over all my labor in which I have toiled, in which I have shown myself wise under the sun. This also is vanity. He said, you know, the wise man said, you know, you do all this good work and you build up all this stuff and you don't know what's going to happen with your children after you. Now, we know what happened with Rehoboam after him. Rehoboam did not rule wisely. He left it to a man who would lose it. You know, they had all these expensive gold shields. Now they've got bronze ones to take their place. They've lost it. You pay a heavy price for sin. That's one of the great lessons of all of this. You love the truth and you don't believe a lie. Anybody else anything before we... Well, no, you don't care. It's okay. They didn't want y'all to make any comments.